This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. McLean County Nursing Home Administrator Cindy Wagner says some things have changed to help reduce budget deficits at the care center.
We have seen an increase in the number of short-term stay residents, the ones that are coming in for rehab. That's quite different for us.
Cindy Wagner tells GLT's Eric Stock the county also had to spend some money on the facility to accomplish that. Plus, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense held a vigil over the weekend to mark the 6th anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre. We'll have a report. And the Prairie Pride Coalition, an LGBTQI plus advocacy group, is endorsing the local efforts of the Salvation Army Homeless Services in spite of the LGBTQ stance of the Salvation Army National Group. Prairie Pride board member David Bentlin talks about that move. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. 9 people have died in Bloomington Normal in gun violence this year. More than that tally have survived bullet wounds. The group Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense marked the 6th anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre with a vigil at St. John's Lutheran Church in Bloomington on Sunday. They read the names of the Twin Cities people who've died in gunfire in 2018.
Joseph Gardner. Reginald Hart, Jr. Tanisha A. Brown. Stephen C. Alexander. Nate Pena. Corey Jackson. Juan Carlos Perez. Trevante D. Kirkwood. Egerton Dover.
The 9 are among the nearly 500,000 people in the U.S. who have died in gunfire in the last decade. Robin Cashin says she knew 3 of the young men from her Bloomington Junior High job as a social worker and counselor who routinely talks to kids about what they want to do with their lives and had close contact with 2 of them.
These young men had their hopes and dreams violently stolen from them. One of the young men had just turned 18, barely an adult. He will never get a chance to fulfill those future plans.
Cashin also notes 2 of the 9 were new fathers themselves. Rabbi Rebecca Dubow of Moses Montefiore Temple says U.S. gun violence is so high that not even in a place of worship can people feel safe.
The rate of gun violence in the United States is up to 25 times higher than other developed countries. Enough is enough.
Westside Pastor Andrew Held of City Life Youth for Christ told the crowd that even during a meeting on what to do about gun violence, the problem intruded.
And we ended that meeting, we were talking about getting ice cream, and 4 shots rang out. And Antoine Smith came running from Jefferson Street onto Washington Street. He was shot in his jaw and he was shot in his shoulder. We were able to sit him down, we were able to pray with him, calm him down, and he survived. And it wasn't a week later, having Bible study, that a guy came running up through Allen Street, shooting at a crowd of about 8 teens, 3 moms with baby strollers, didn't hit anybody in the crowd, but kids running and screaming.
Held says those incidents launched his church into youth ministry. He says he officiated this year at the funeral of Stephen Alexander, one of the 9 shot to death in Bloomington Normal.
His brother had to come in handcuffs from prison. Everyone had to exit. His brother had to mourn in handcuffs. As we stood there just alone, me and him, and then he exited. Then his father had to come in handcuffs, and that man was destroyed hardest funeral I've ever done. Hardest. That has to stop. This cycle of violence needs to stop.
Held says not only do laws need changing, adults need to help young people make different choices. He says at the funerals and vigils he's attended this year, there are siblings and mothers, but no men.
We need loving, caring adults to spend time with these youth. Not programs. We need you. What are you going to do after today? After you heard those names, what's next?
He urges people to get involved with existing programs like the ones at Western Avenue Community Center.
If it's that serious, then we need to just abandon all things that distract us from this mission and move forward into serving our youth and loving our youth and doing it whatever we can to keep them from making these poor choices. Vote, yes, definitely vote. But the kids I serve, they go and they get trunkloads of guns every week. Doesn't matter what the law is. It's the heart issue. That's the real issue.
Moms demand action for Gun Sense member Tammy Mance has a daughter, Haley. Haley sang a song at the vigil. Tammy Mance says she thought her daughter might pick something uplifting that would offer hope. Instead, Haley picked the song, If I Die Young. Tammy Mance said that is a wake-up call, and it breaks her heart that her daughter is not the only young person who thinks about dying.
Instead of our children wondering what they will be when they grow up, our children are wondering if they will get the chance to grow up, and that is just not right.
Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, formed in March of 2017 in response to the shooting at Parkland High School in Florida. I'm Charlie Schlenker, WGLT News.
Act on, send me away with the words of a love song. Oh, 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 oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, shine down on my mother, so no one's safe with you, and she's still under my colors. Oh, yeah. Life ain't always what you think it ought to be. No, ain't even great, but she buries a baby. The sharp knife of a sure life. Well, I've had just enough time. If I die young, bury me in satin. Lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river. Act on, send me away with the words of a love song. The sharp knife of a sure life.
Support for GLT comes from the CH3 Satellite Cafe, the boutique coffee shop from Coffee Hound nestled inside Bloomington Cycle, serving specialty handcrafted beverages. Open 7 to 5 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Saturdays, and 9 to 4 Sundays, with ample patio seating at 915 East Washington in Bloomington. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, Eric Stock reports on changes at the McLean County Nursing Home as that institution tries to eliminate red ink and come back to an even keel. A Central Illinois LGBTQI+ advocacy group has taken the unusual step of endorsing the homeless service operations of a group that has historically been opposed to that community on religious doctrinal grounds. The Prairie Pride Coalition is saying the Bloomington Normal operations of the Salvation Army's Safe Harbor Shelter are worthy of support. David Bentlin is on the board of the Prairie Pride Coalition and joins us to talk about why the group chose to make a deeper dive into Salvation Army positions and practices in Central Illinois.
We had heard over the years from members of our organization asking us questions about the policy. Was it still in effect that we should not support the Salvation Army based on past incidences and their mission statement and their policies? And up to this year, we had really deferred to our national and state LGBTQI plus organizations for guidance. And we had heard that, the national office had really not changed that much and that we needed to continue to, cast a very critical eye toward the Salvation Army operation and really question whether we should support that operation. But based on what we were hearing from our local folks, we decided that it was worth looking into a little deeper here on the local level. We had not really done an in-depth analysis of the local Salvation Army and Safe Harbor operation. So we thought that this was a good time for us to take that extra step and maybe provide an added perspective to the situation.
What past instances on the local level had there been with the Salvation Army?
We had a couple of meetings with the staff at the Salvation Army this fall, and they have talked with us about the fact that they know that they have had LGBTQI plus people come through their operations looking for assistance or looking for shelter. So we are aware that the folks in our community have been using the local Salvation Army operation.
So, but had there been any local instances that were negative, that cast the Salvation Army in a negative light, or was that all on the national level in your first reference to
right.
their past history?
Right. We had not heard of any negative experiences on the local level. We were aware of court cases, taking places in some jurisdictions like New York City, where a transgender person brought suit against the Salvation Army operation there based on some discrimination they felt they had experienced at their homeless shelter in New York City. And there are several other cases around the country about that as well.
So what did you find when you talked with local Salvation Army leadership?
Well, we found an operation that has been making some great strides in the last few years. We met with the Director of Social Services, Gabby Bontia, and she explained to us that they understand the national position on LGBTQI people. At the same time, they...
That it's incompatible with Christian life.
Yes, incompatible with Christian life, and sort of a love the sinner, hate the sin sort of approach to our community, which many of us in the community are all too familiar with. But we came, we met with the local operation leaders, and they demonstrated to us that they have been doing a lot of work in this area. Gabby and her staff have attended national and regional conferences, which include sessions about serving the LGBTQI plus community. And these were conferences that were sponsored by the Salvation Army. So that told us a couple of things. It told us that on the local level, there was an interest in better serving members of our community, but also the fact that the Salvation Army is sponsoring these sessions at their conferences tells us that at least it is on their radar, that they realize that they need to do better in this area.
So doctrine and practice are beginning to be different.
Right, right. I think that in looking at our local operation, it was looking at the boots on the ground rather than the philosophical aspect of the Salvation Army. And we got a chance to talk with staff members here in Bloomington Normal, at the Bloomington Normal operation, and we really got a different picture. We got a picture of staff who were very caring, who were very careful about learning more about the LGBTQI plus community, about having the cultural competency necessary to better serve members of our community who need their services.
So what had these conferences offered in ways to better deal with this community?
Right. Well, I'm not sure of the specifics. That might be a better question for the folks at the Salvation Army who attended those conferences. I do know I spoke with a local activist who facilitated training here in Bloomington Normal for the local operation of Salvation Army and Safe Harbor. And I know that they facilitate training that gives staff members the tools they need to offer better respect to the members of the LGBTQI plus community. Everything from pronouns, correct pronouns to use for people who are transgender, just a lot of sensitivity to the issues that are important to members of our community. And so when someone does come through their doors who is a member of our community, they can treat them with respect and with inclusion and with an affirming environment.
In the spirit of education, what are those pronouns?
Well, I mean, I go by he, him, his. There are transgender people who would like to use the pronouns that relate to their authentic gender identity. There are some members of our community who use they, them, theirs because they do not want to be pigeonholed into a specific set of pronouns. So there's a learning curve that even, quite honestly, Charlie, members of our community are on when it comes to the pronouns situation. It's changing, it seems, from minute to minute. So there are things like that the local operation knew that they could learn more about and that would help them better serve and respect the people who come through the door at the Salvation Army.
It is one thing to say, okay, let's separate the national stance from the local stance, but you have actually gone on to affirmatively say this chapter of the Salvation Army is worthy of support. Why that larger step?
That was a little bit of a larger step for us to take.
To go public rather than just to your members.
Right. Well, we have a membership of a little over 600 people, and those are not just people restricted to Bloomington Normal. They include people from Peoria, Decatur, Springfield, so they're from all over. But we felt that it was important because we knew that a lot of our supporters and allies who are not necessarily members of our organization needed to know this information as well. And we felt it was very important to offer a nuance and a different perspective to what they're hearing about the Salvation Army. And to be quite honest, we felt it was important also because, relatively speaking, this is a smaller community. I mean, you have metro areas like St. Louis and Chicago that offer a plethora of resources and services for the LGBTQI+ community. When it comes to Bloomington Normal, the resources are much fewer than in some of those larger areas. And when it comes to homeless shelters for adults, there are not a lot of options. And so when we find an organization locally, like the Salvation Army Safe Harbor, that is affirming and offering a safe environment for people who are homeless in our community, that's something that we really felt we really needed to champion. And it kind of ties in with our overall mission as Prairie Pride Coalition. We want to hold up those resources, those organizations, those businesses here locally who are honoring our community, who are accepting and welcoming and providing an environment where people can feel safe and they can feel like they are included.
Would your answer have been different on the support them or don't support them question if they had said to you that they do proselytize instead of view their mission as a service provider and an agency of relief in the community?
It would have been different, yes. For that reason, it would have been different. And it also would have been different if we would have found out differently about how the Red Kettle donations are processed. Those two things were important to us. We did not want to give an endorsement to a local branch of an organization if they were proselytizing, if they were endorsing conversion therapy, different things like that. At the same time, as far as the Red Kettle promotion goes, we were very cautious about that because we wanted to make sure that we completely understood where those dollars were going. And in our discussions with the local staff here at the Salvation Army and Safe Harbor, we did understand and we did find out that those 100% of those donations that go in those Red Kettles in the Bloomington Normal area stay with the local operation. And that was very important to us. We did not want donations being put in those Red Kettles with a percentage of it going to the national office. We wanted it to stay local because that's what we're supporting as an LGBTQI+ community and an organization. We're supporting the local operation.
But the local operation has this national name, and the national organization does stand for certain things. Are you participating in supporting their brand by this action?
That's a good question. What I can say is I think what we're supporting is we are supporting people who are working for change from within. And I think that's what the local operation of Salvation Army is trying to do. They are trying to work from within. The way a lot of religious organizations who are dealing with the LGBTQI plus question are doing, there are congregations in certain churches who are working from within to bring about change on a national level. And I think that local operations like our Safe Harbor and Salvation Army are trying hard to bring that work to the national level and trying to push towards some of these changes. So I think you can say that we're endorsing the brand, but we're really not endorsing the brand. We're endorsing the concept of a fully inclusive Salvation Army.
How important is nuance in this day of black and whites and internet broadsides? You mentioned nuance earlier.
Right. I think it's very important because a lot of people can look on the internet and they can see the handful of cases that are happening around the country involving the Salvation Army and the allegations of discrimination against members of our community. And we hope that those cases come to a successful conclusion and that those people who feel they've been discriminated against will find justice through those cases. At the same time, I hesitate to have them speak for the entire local operations of the Salvation Army, because we know there are good people on the local levels who are doing wonderful things. And this is more me personally than anything. It's a case of not wanting to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The vital operations that they provide to members of our community, we needed to find a way to support what they're doing while making that support conditional toward the national office especially.
Are there other instances of service providers or entities, organizations within this community that deserve a similar attempt at balanced scrutiny?
I think there are. In all honesty, this came to us. I met Gabby probably about 4 years ago. And this, we were both attending another meeting, a completely different topic, and ran into her. And I think she was just beginning at the Salvation Army at that time. And she indicated to me that they were going to try to do better in the area of LGBTQI plus services. And so she gave me her business card. And at the time, I didn't think much of it, and I don't even think I kept her business card, because I had that mindset that, you know, Salvation Army equals bad. And so I didn't do much with that. But then this fall, I was talking with a local activist, like I said earlier, who had just facilitated some training with the local operation of the Salvation Army and Safe Harbor. And it got me thinking that maybe this was worth a second look, that maybe it was time for us to take a closer look at the local operation. And I'm glad we did, because we found out a lot that we didn't know before. Now, having said that, we would welcome the opportunity to hear from other social service organizations. And we have already heard from a number of them. I mean, we have a local business and resource directory that includes members who are supportive of the LGBTQI plus community. And among those members are social service agencies like Project Oz that are doing great things to address the needs of their clientele who are LGBTQI plus. So we are aware of other organizations in town. But as a result of this, if other social service organizations come to us, we would welcome the opportunity. Because, as I said earlier, one of our main goals as an organization is to lift up and shine a spotlight on those organizations and businesses and resources in our community who are offering us support.
Are you getting pushback from your own members or your own allies?
We rolled out this statement in a couple of different ways, on our Facebook page and on some other Facebook pages, and then we also sent an email directly to our membership. And we have received support in email form. We've received report from several people in our community, have not received any adverse responses by email. On Facebook, we have gotten a little bit of pushback. I would say, though, the overwhelming response has been support and gratitude to provide this additional information about the Salvation Army and help people feel a little better about supporting that organization.
David Bentlin of the Prairie Pride Coalition, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.
It's been a while. And we miss you. Is it time to come back or tell us for the first time how much you appreciate GLT? Make a year-end contribution at WGLT.org.
GLT is made possible by Illinois State University, home of the Illinois State Redbirds. Featuring 19 teams competing at the NCAA Division I level, Illinois State promotes success in the athletic and academic arenas. News, schedules, and ticket information can be found at GoRedbirds.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, the Illinois Politics Roundtable looks at a curious development and admission by Governor Bruce Rauner. After losing $1.2 million in McLean County tax money last year, the county-run nursing home has been implementing a series of recommendations that a panel of healthcare leaders presented in April to help the facility become financially sustainable. Administrator Cindy Wagner tells GLT's Eric Stock the 150-bed nursing home has expanded its Medicare rehabilitation for short-term residents.
The panel made several recommendations that will benefit the overall operation of the nursing home, ways to boost census, ways to improve the look of the building and such, and improve staffing here in the building.
Let's talk about the initial recommendations as far as the revenue generation, talking about the need for more Medicare rehabilitation and some other highlights, if you can pinpoint what the nursing home has sought to implement following that report.
The best thing that we have done is got into an agreement with the ACO, which is through OSF Hospitals. So we are now one of their preferred providers. So we will be getting more, and we have been getting more referrals directly from St. Joe's, which has helped our census, and those are all short-term rehabilitation patients.
And if you could explain what all that rehab entails.
That entails short-term stay, therapy, intensive therapy for people often that have had an acute illness or an acute condition. Those people are here covered under Medicare Part A, and so their stay is short-term, and they rehab and return home.
Is that something that the nursing home hadn't done prior to or just hadn't explored to its fullest extent?
We have. We've always had that ability to do that. Just having the benefit of the provider status with the ACO has helped us to increase that census, though.
You talk about building appearance and that sort of thing. What all is being done on that end of things?
We've done several cosmetic upgrades, just some painting and window treatments, some flooring, some new furniture, and then we've also converted 8 rooms down on our rehab wing into private rooms.
Have you seen a difference in the number of residents that you've had in the last few months?
We have seen an increase in the number of short-term stay residents, the ones that are coming in for rehab, and that's quite different for us. You know, generally we would run in the area of maybe 2 to 5, and we've been up as high as anywhere as 10, 12 at a time.
Mm-hmm. So. Is long-term care about the same?
Long-term care stays about the same, yes.
As far as staffing goes, they had recommended that they be paid better to be able to attract and retain more. Has anything been done along that line?
Yes. The board did recently pass a wage increase for us for our registered nurses, and so our wages are a lot more attractive now for full-time, part-time registered nurses. We've recently hired 3.
Can you say how much of a difference that is now, what they can make?
The increase, what happened is there was a wage study done, and we found that our wages were significantly lower in the RN range compared to the other facilities in town, and so we've increased ours significantly to what they were at before in order to be competitive.
Have you noticed a difference yet in the response from the employee pool?
I think it's been positive. The employees that are here that also, you know, due to compression, we went ahead and raised everybody else's wages in the RN area, and so they've been happy with the increase in wage.
Well, and I'm sure that's a challenge that's going on across the industry. We've been reading about long-term care industry in particular has had a hard time attracting medical professionals and health professionals to that field. Is that something that you've experienced throughout your career in this realm of healthcare?
I would say so, especially in this town. There are so many healthcare facilities. There's the hospitals. There's now so many assisted livings and other options and a lot of medical clinics that the pool of nurses, and LPN CNAs is pretty, there's not as many to go around, I would say, as there used to be.
Are there other dimensions to the employee side of things that are being addressed to improve satisfaction and anything along those lines?
We have an employee program where we meet monthly and we try to have staff that are regular floor staff, including some management staff, and it's for morale boosting and finding positive things to do with the staff. We do monthly raffles for the staff, and we do different casual days and dress up days, things that are fun for the staff, fun for the residents to see the staff doing. And we're always looking for suggestions from the staff on and anything that we can do to improve morale and improve the positive atmosphere.
And it can be a challenge, as we talked about, an industry that has had a hard time keeping and attracting the kind of employees that you want. Have you had to endure competition from competitors in the market in that realm?
I would say so. We've always, because we are the county facility, we're trying to get away from that stigma of the county, but people still think the county, and so they're looking at working at places like hospitals and short-term rehab acute facilities as opposed to wanting to work in the long-term care nursing home.
You talk about stigma, are you referring to the fact that it's government-run, possibly more reliant on Medicaid dollars and that sort of thing?
Correct.
As someone who came from the private industry at Heritage, what stands out to you as the major differences in not only how the nursing home is run, but in terms of the experience for the residents?
I would say the experience with the residents is the same. I mean, long-term care is long-term care no matter where you're at. I would say that we have a greater long-term care population here as opposed to some of the other facilities that do more short-term rehab, more quick turnaround with their residents. As far as coming from private to public sector, it's been a challenge learning how things have to go through several approval processes and taking things to committee, to the board, et cetera, to get approval for things.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Cindy Wegner, who is the administrator of the McLean County Nursing Home in Normal. Is it harder to manage in the standpoint that you might be the last resort or the last option for some families?
I don't think so. I don't want us to be considered the last resort. I would like us to be considered the first resort for people because we have a lot to offer here, and we do offer a lot that other facilities do not, because we are willing to take people who are on Medicaid. Some facilities have a limited availability to take people that are on Medicaid, and we take people no matter what their pay source is.
Are there other changes planned in the coming months and years?
We're looking at changing our rehab department. We're going to do some upgrades and expand that area as our census with the ACO builds. Hopefully put in some more private rooms and then continue doing more cosmetic upgrades as time and money allows.
When we spoke with Bill Wasson, the county administrator, a short time ago during the budgeting process, he said that the goal was to improve revenue so it can at least break even, possibly make a few dollars to absorb some financial hits that will come along the way. And of course, health care is in a very dynamic era here in the state in particular. So do you feel that the county is satisfied with the changes that have been made to this point and the trajectory that the nursing home is going in now?
I believe they are, yes. When I go to my monthly meetings to the health committee, which is the committee that I report to, they're generally very pleased with the reports and with the progress that's being made.
One county board member who we spoke to at the time that the panel had made its recommendations had said that if the nursing home were to falter for whatever reason, the private sector would be able to step in and absorb those clients in some form or fashion. And of course, the private industry already has a large number of those clients. Is that a reasonable expectation to just say, let the private sector figure it out? Or does the county nursing home have such a vital place in that market?
The private sector, as I mentioned earlier, they're very limited on the number of Medicaid beds that they have available, and their overall, you know, each facility has a certain census that they can take. And so with the large number of Medicaid people that we do care for here in the facility, there would be difficulty finding facilities right here in the local area that would be able to absorb.
So you feel that the county really does have an obligation to maintain this to the extent that it has?
Absolutely.
That was McLean County Nursing Home Administrator Cindy Wagner with GLT's Eric Stock. Wagner says she's not sure yet if the nursing home will come closer to breaking even in 2018 since it put in $50,000 in facility improvements and raised pay for registered nurses to up to $33 an hour. She believes the nursing home's long-term financial outlook is much brighter. She hopes the nursing home can add outpatient care by 2020. That would require approval from state regulators. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, the GLT Datebook and an offering for seniors. The surprising thing about Governor Bruce Rauner's admission that he tried to duck out of the governor's race last summer is that he admitted it. It's the take from the Illinois Politics Roundtable. Sean Crawford moderates the panel, composed of Charlie Wheeler, the head of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois at Springfield, IPR State House reporter Daisy Contreras, Heather Sharon of the Daily Line, and IPR State House editor Brian Mackey, who starts the discussion of Governor Rauner's admission four people turned him down to replace him on the ticket, even as late as last summer.
Yeah, this is one of those things that's the least surprising actual bit of news, but it's surprising that somebody said it out loud. This was an interview with ABC, Channel 7 in Chicago, and he said that the governor said basically he thinks that since President Trump was elected, his chances for reelection were really going downhill, and he said he had a particularly good sense of that early in 2017. I would remind you that's still during the budget impasse. That's before the tax increase vote that happened that summer when more than a dozen Republicans defected from Governor Rauner's camp and helped Democrats pass a budget and the two-year stalemate and raise the income tax rate in Illinois. It also comes before his signing of some pro-abortion legislation for which conservatives were very critical of the governor. And it's a real mind bender that he's talking about this now, I guess. But as Representative Ives said, not really surprising to people who watched the campaign. And it just did not seem like he had his heart in it. He did not spend as much money as some people think he should have. And he also did not invest in other Republicans down the ticket, for which I think there's still going to be a reckoning in the party.
And as we recall, and we've spent entire shows analyzing this, Rauner faced a big problem with his own party. The division was obvious. Many, many conservative Republicans were unhappy with the governor, and many just wanted change. And Jeanne Ives represented that change for them. And former Republican State Senator Karen McConaughey said she was one of the women approached by Rauner to take his place. She retired from the legislature in September. And according to the Chicago Tribune, McConaughey said the governor's offer reflected the way he ran the state. And she said, and I quote, "He tried to take himself out the same way he came in. He never learned the job." Some strong words.
Well, Charlie, he's blaming, in some case here, Donald Trump. And I'm sure Donald Trump's unpopularity in the state of Illinois probably did not help him in a reelection bid. At the same time, as was mentioned, he had his own baggage to deal with as well.
Yeah, I would say that I tend to agree with Senator McConaughey. He really didn't understand what the job was about. He didn't understand that, unlike Scott Walker, who had overwhelming Republican majorities in the Senate and the House in the state of Wisconsin, and therefore could ram through an anti-union agenda, Rauner didn't have that. He had to deal with Democratic majorities. The Democratic Party supports organized labor, plain and simple. It never seemed to me that he was able to understand how the governor is supposed to work. This is not a top-down system where the governor gives orders and the lawmakers scramble to follow his will. He has to learn to negotiate with people. He did not have that. And as was alluded to, the fact that he supported legislation that was anathema to basic conservatives, that doomed him, I think, right then and there. And I would argue that it didn't matter who was the president, be it Trump, be it Hillary Clinton, be it, you know, the man in the moon, he was going to have a tough time getting reelected with his anti-union agenda and with his signature of legislation that was detested by conservatives.
And Heather, for a guy that didn't think he could actually pull this out and win, he still spent quite a bit of money.
That's true. And, you know, I think that the question of why he decided to reveal this now is just absolutely fascinating, because what it's going to do, I believe, is sort of fuel the intense sort of conflagration that's engulfing the Illinois Republican Party as they sort of figure out how to recover from losing every statewide office, losing, you know, a significant number of seats in the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate, and deciding sort of how they go forward. And I think, you know, I think Jeannie Ives' remarks this morning were sort of an indication that she's going to sort of point to this as she urges her fellow Illinois Republicans to sort of turn their back on sort of the Rauner era of Illinois Republican politics and go in a different direction. You know, of course, the issue there is whether or not a more right-leaning Republican Party can really sort of win back any of those seats, which I think is a very much an open question.
And I guess, Brian, you did talk with Jeannie Ives. I don't know if she's, you know, discussing that yet at this point, what her role could possibly be going forward with the Republican Party, but I'm guessing she wants to be a part of it.
I asked her, you know, do you have any plans to run for another office or try and remain involved in party leadership or anything like that? She said she has no plans to run for office, but she does want to try and continue to influence the conversation in Illinois. So what role that takes, I think we will probably find out soon enough, but she wasn't saying just yet. I would like to say one other tidbit I thought was fascinating about this interview, and it goes back to the question of Rauner's governing style and his the way he thinks about government and what he learned or did not learn. He told Craig Wall, the ABC television reporter in Chicago, I learned that he was talking about House Speaker Michael Madigan. He said, quote, I learned that working with him directly won't get the result. He responds through his caucus. Pressure through his caucus is the way to get the speaker to move, which is fascinating because there was this other guy named Bruce Rauner who went around the state for 6 years saying how Michael Madigan controls everything in Illinois and, you know, he snaps his finger and people respond to him. So it's interesting to hear the governor say this, and it's, you know, yet another thing he said that is completely at odds with other past statements.
You know, another way to look at what he said too is in keeping with his whole administration, where he didn't take responsibility for anything. So, as was mentioned, the Republican Party is in disarray. But hey, it's not my fault. I tried to get somebody else to run when it looked like I was going to have a rough time, and nobody wanted to do it. So don't blame me, because the Republicans are in such bad shape.
Yeah, Charlie, I don't think Mike Madigan is an enigma that way. I think that we know, and just like him, and just like others who have controlled you know, these leadership posts in the General Assembly, yeah, pressure from their own caucus, from their own members, is going to move them on certain issues.
Oh, sure. One of the things that's been true of Madigan from day one in his leadership position, he has no ideological agenda. If he needs to be a liberal on something, he'll be liberal, if that's what's good for electing House Democrats. If being conservative, he'll be conservative. And there have been occasions in the past when he has responded to what his members say is important to them in their districts. I'm not going to go into the laundry list here, but there are a lot of examples of Madigan doing what he thinks is best to elect people back home.
That's Charlie Wheeler of the University of Illinois at Springfield, joined on the Illinois Politics Roundtable by IPR Statehouse reporter Daisy Contreras, Heather Sharon of the Daily Line, IPR Statehouse editor Brian Mackey, and moderator Sean Crawford. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker with this GLT Datebook. Mary Shadowins has a passion to serve the elderly. For the last 7 years, she's done the program McLean County Santa for Seniors. She started with some co-workers.
We pitched in and got some simple lotions and blankets and socks and things and distributed them to McLean County Nursing Home. Was our very first nursing home. So, and it's kind of blossomed and grown from there.
How did it start?
It just started because I was missing that Christmas giving spirit, that everything was so commercialized, and I felt, what better way to give back? There are organizations for children, families, and military during Christmas, thank goodness, but you'll find that there's not very many organizations for the elderly. So it really pushed me to do that, and it's been the best feeling ever since, best Christmas feeling.
Do the seniors need these things?
There are you'd be amazed, quite honestly, how many low-income seniors there are in these nursing homes. McLean County and Aperion Nursing Homes have benefited greatly, I believe, from the donations that we've provided to them. They're just simply, the elderly are alone and without, and we just want to serve them.
How do you collect, and what do you collect?
We've been collecting from, it started out with coworkers, and we've reached out to the community and through Facebook. We've gotten a positive feedback from there. We collect lotions, blankets, socks. They are stuffed animals, baby dolls. Our Alzheimer's patients really love baby dolls. So those are some of the items that we do collect.
How do you work with the nursing homes to place these things where they'll do the most good?
For the ones that we've served before, we've reached out to them, talked to activity directors and nursing staff, and they've suggested items that would be useful for the patients there at the nursing homes.
And those generally are?
The non-slip socks, the slippers, the personal items such as body wash and lotion, bath powder. They're usually cold by nature, unfortunately. So hats, gloves, socks, scarves, blankets are always a welcome donation.
How do you distribute and when do you distribute?
A group of us get together with McLean County. It's usually my family and friends at this time. And we've had some outreach from the community now wanting to join in and help deliver and help organize. And so we'll get these gifts together and pack them up and get them shipped out. We have a handful of individual seniors that have reached out from the community, but mostly this is just going directly to the nursing homes here in Bloomington Normal at this time.
How many people do you help each year?
Well, the very first year, it was only 35, and we have now grown to, in 2017, we have helped over 600 individuals in the community.
That sounds like a lot of stuff.
It is. It is. And it's by the graciousness of the community. We would not be able to do what we do if we did not have McLean County Bloomington Normal support. It's absolutely essential to us.
What do people tell you when they give?
They are just so very happy that there's someone out there that's doing this. It's about who wants to help give, and they are so delighted themselves to be a part of it. It makes them feel important, and they really are. They really are an important person, an important part of this. It's very integral.
What's the feedback been from the people who receive?
Overjoyed, so thankful, so grateful. They're so used to, most of them are alone. Most of them do not have a lot of family or people that care for them. So when you reach out to those individuals, a simple conversation is a godsend to them. But when you go out of your way to spend some time with them, give them a gift, try to make the holiday better for them, you could just see the joy in their eyes. And it's such a thrill. I can't explain the joy it brings me.
Do you get to hear those stories in person?
I do get a lot of feedback from the activity directors and individuals that work in the nursing homes. Unfortunately, due to HIPAA laws, it's not as easy for me to get directly to the patients, but we have reached out to some nursing homes, and we're trying to work with some families to see if possibly they would give us permission to maybe talk to their elders or maybe take some pictures for the site so that some of our donors can see exactly where these funds and where these items are going to.
Can you share a couple stories you received from the activity directors?
Just the feedback of the happiness it brings, that they have individuals that really have no family and they're happy now. They are so thankful. They're so grateful. They're crying. It's such a simple thing to do, to just bring so much joy to these people. And they're grateful that we would take the time out of our week, out of our day, especially at this time of year, to take care of their people. That's what they are to them. To these people that work in these institutions with these elderly, they take ownership of them, and they're so happy that somebody's trying besides them to bring a smile to their faces.
Have you had parents bring their kids along to make the drop-off? And what
we have had in the past is Girl Scouts and Boy Scout troops that have gotten together and collected donations and bagged them up and brought them in. So there is some community, some children in the community that are us helping as well. So I really love that. I think it's good to show our children our future, you know, that you need to take care of your elders, that they are still here and they're important.
Mary Shadowins of McLean County's Santa for Seniors says donations can be left at ServPro on 9 Quest Drive in Bloomington until December 21st. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. WGLT.org is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Eric Stock. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's go out with the music of Haley Mance, the teenager who sang If I Die Young at the vigil for those who died in Bloomington Normal and around the nation in gun violence. That vigil was Sunday at St. John's Lutheran Church in Bloomington. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One.
And I'll be wearing white when I come into your kingdom. I'm as green as the ring on my little cold finger. I've never known the loving of a man, but it sure felt nice when he was holding my hand. As a boy hearing sound says he'll love me forever. Forever will be severed by the sharp knife of a sure life. Well, I've had just enough time.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.